Good evening. Welcome to the Solaire Report. Today is Thursday, November 15th, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Next week, I'm headed over to the Texas Panhandle for Thanksgiving, and with a stop in Oklahoma City on the way back, I'm looking forward to that trip, and then up to Pennsylvania for a few days at Christmas. That's my travel schedule for the rest of the year. It's good to be bopping around the heartland. When you come back to the United States, you realize, oh, there's so much beautiful land. It's a beautiful country. We have a new Food for the Soul column. It's on Museum Gardens, and it's great. I love that column. As our cultural scout would say, check it out. The second quarter wrap-up hardcovers are here. We've mailed them out. If you're a premium subscriber, you should have it. If you don't have it, please let us know. It's beautiful. If you're not a premium subscriber and you haven't ordered one, you can get it at the store. We've also reissued our 2016 prayer book in a generic form. And if you want one, just email your name and mailing address to office@solaire.com. Feel free to request some extra for gifts at the Christmas time. It's a great stocking stuffer. And that, of course, is free. Don't have to go to the store to get that. Just send something. Just send an email to office@solaire.com. Just say you're a Solaire Report subscriber and tell us where to send it. So that's right. Christmas is coming, and coming up is Give the Gift. We'll be mailing it after Thanksgiving. We invite you to give a complimentary 60-day subscription to the Solaire Report to the person of your choice for Christmas. It's a way to add energy to your Christmas budget and spread the word about the Solaire Report. Our theme tonight is Burning California. As the fires continue in California, the number of unanswered questions and possible scenarios continues to expand. Of course, the big question is natural or man-made. There are many factors that argue for these being wildfires. First of all, California's had 7 years of drought. Things are very dry in many areas. And there's a significant drop in humidity. And so with years of drought and very low humidity, many things can trigger a fire. We see reports of sparks or electrical system problems from the utilities in the area. The one most under the gun right now is PG&E in Northern California, but there's also Southern California Electric, which is part of Edison International in the LA area. And so there's a real danger that the utilities will be blamed or they're responsible. And if they are not found responsible, the expenses to them can be rolled into their regulatory base. If they are found responsible, then they can. And so you're literally looking at a potential, if you look at their stocks, they've taken an enormous nosedive since this latest round of fires started. There is criticism of the Bureau of Land Management because of the environmental rules that have been imposed, particularly in California, forcing owners not to clear dead trees or brush. There's criticisms, including from the president, about poor land management. In theory, fires can happen as a result of solar flares or other geophysical phenomena, or can be exacerbated about it. One factor that interests me, Mark McLandis in his Mount Shasta testimony on global spraying talked about the particles in the spray and how they could build up and how they would affect fires, making life more difficult for the firefighters. And if you are concerned, every firefighter, professional or volunteer, should see that testimony. Again, it's Mark McLandish testifying at Mount Shasta in front of the county commissioners. You can pick it up on a search. There's some coverage attributing all this to climate change. I believe that's a ruse, although we could be certainly having changes in the climate as a result of geophysical phenomena. If you haven't read a commentary that's up, you can link to it from the homepage called An Intelligent Conversation About the Environment. It sort of says what I have to say on climate change. Anyway, there are many, many different reasons why, you know, some or all of these, or certainly some of the fires could be wildfires. The conditions are there. So here's the case for what I call thermal gentrification. One subscriber got mad at me and said it was genocide and unsubscribed because they thought that word was too kind. There are multiple re-engineerings going on now that the financial coup is over. both of the financial and legal system, the governance system, and the physical system. And so the plan for Fortress America is proceeding. If you look at what was started with the housing bubble, and I'm going to keep talking about it when I talk about megacities in this week's fourth component of the wrap-up, the third quarter wrap-up, there is a major push underway to move people out of ownership of land and into either smaller portions of land or into becoming renters. So off of the land, off of self-sufficiency and into a rental position and into dependency, you know, it makes it, among other things, much easier to securitize the cash flows for publicly traded stocks. Now, why would somebody engage in thermal gentrification? Why go to this much trouble to basically burn, you know, 1 million to 2 million acres of California land? One, clearing land for Silicon Valley North and then LA North, their big manufacturing and other installations related to high tech and defense that we're moving back from Asia. But with that, we're going to bring in a lot of high IQ immigrants and global allies. And so you're clearing the space both for the businesses and the labor coming in to, you know, to, it's a lot of labor swinging in. In addition, one of the subscribers tweeted out a picture of the high-speed rail. It wouldn't surprise me if there's a concerted effort to get the high-speed rail plan accelerated. The reality is, if you're going to grow LA and San Francisco and you need to widely distribute your labor to ease the housing conditions, you need to extend what a reasonable bedroom community distance is. And high-speed rail has been doing that in China. And so I think the competition is on to do it here. In addition, it will connect LA and San Francisco with Seattle. And those, if you look at the relationship between Silicon Valley and Seattle, there's a lot of reasons to want to connect those. Many people bring up the Agenda 21 and Agenda 30 UN issue. There's certainly something to it. Part of this is moving the population from 3% urbanized in 1800 to what it is today, which is 50%. It's been accelerating over the last two decades. And some estimates show it going as high as 80% nationwide. It's funny, I have a wonderful subscriber who flies a lot, travels a lot, and is always saying, you know, look down when you're in a plane, the whole planet's empty. It's very true. But again, as I said, moving people from owner to renter and from self-sufficient to dependent. And slowing down and impoverishing targeted individuals is another example. If you look at some of the ways that individual homes have been targeted, there's a real question as to whether they're stacking functions and why you're going to go in and do this. Why not pick off the homes of people who've been giving you significant trouble? Interestingly enough, Del Bigtree, the producer of Vaxxed, had his home in Malibu burnt. I just did Whitley Strieber's show on Tuesday. I recorded it. It'll publish in 2 weeks. And Whitley said he had 9 very close friends in Malibu. 7 of them had lost their homes. That's a tremendous, tremendous, just a tremendous impact there. So what are the scenarios? The scenarios are, these are either all wildfires as a result of drought, humidity, and sort of the toxicity of whatever is in the global spring. Another scenario is it's arson made worse by wildfire conditions, or a combination of both. My guess is that 80% chance, it's mostly or all what I call thermal gentrification. And I think it's very, very important for every one of us to contemplate the possibility that it is. We need to be prepared for it to be or not to be. But I think, given how high I think the chance is that some, if not all, of these fires are inspired by man-made efforts and are intentional, I think it's very important that we be prepared to deal with a world that has taken this turn. Now, the question is, how is this done? And I've explored a lot of the technological possibilities. And the answer, of course, is I have no idea. The reality is going to be done from the sky, I believe, with planes or satellites or drones, but also from the ground or a combination of sky and ground. There are multiple technologies that are possible. So my guess is you have several teams. You know, when the people who run the planet do stuff like this. They have redundancy. They don't like to depend on just one team. And you've got a combination of ground and sky. And it's being done where it's more subtle because you have these kind of combos that play off each other. And it wouldn't surprise me if there's a lot of trial and error going on. They are learning while they're going. Remember, this is also happening in Europe and Canada as well. So this is a global process of re-engineering operations, if you will. The question is, who's doing it? Here's the reality. The U.S. military controls the U.S. airspace. So there can't be anything going on in the sky, although in theory you could be using low-flying drones. But it can't go on unless the U.S. military either, number one, does it, or two, stands down and allows it to happen, or three, another theoretical possibility is they don't have the power to stop it. They have no power up against the forces that are doing it. Operationally, I would be amazed if the first was true, if the U.S. military was doing it. My expectation is you would have a U.S. corporate contractor. I did a great interview earlier this year with Amy Benjamin on secrecy, and I would encourage you to go back and listen to that. But a lot of the classified projects have been moved into corporate hands because, you know, to protect them from FOIA, to protect them from disclosure. So this is kind of operation that one of those contractors would do. And in fact, if you look at the key contractors responsible for the missing money on the payment system, so Lockheed and DynCorp on the IT side, Lockheed's the number one weapons manufacturer in the U.S. DynCorp does a lot of mercenary army kind of activities. Lockheed and DynCorp teamed up with the New York Fed member banks. And so if you look at who I believe was likely responsible or was certainly implementing the missing money transactions, New York Fed, Lockheed, DynCorp, you know, it's the same team. They just keep turning up. And so I think if you look at sort of the who's doing this question, you'd be amazed how much integration there is between California fires, missing money, and 9/11. Essentially, that team is at the heart of the flow of investment into the breakaway civilization. If you're going to run two parallel civilizations from one budget, then you need a team like this who's engineering the cash flows back and forth. A lot of times, you know, the Brits and the Israelis are involved. They like to use multiple agency teams and sort of international flavor. Given that it's California and what they're up to, I would, you know, they may leave the other guys out. But my expectation is the contractors will be using teams that have citizens from a variety of different countries. Again, I would encourage you to listen to that interview with Amy Benjamin on secret, because it's so important to understand how secrecy has been engineered, to understand how sort of out of control things have gotten. This was growing up under the grass for a long, long time before it burst out with fires in California. So the next question is cui bono, who benefits? Remember, just because somebody takes advantage of something doesn't mean they're guilty of doing it. It's not necessarily one and the same. But I think it's very important to look at who's benefiting and to see how that fits with who might be doing this. Anybody with deep pockets is in a position to take advantage of this, both directly and indirectly. The big money here is not just on the land rush. Now, let me guess, and this is high-octane speculation, as Dr. Farrell would say. I think what you're watching is a lot of cleaning up of the Fed balance sheet. I think the Fed bought with the money it's been spending on bond buying. It bought in a lot of fraudulent paper. And we all know about the Wells Fargo scandal. And so I think there's a lot of cleanup. And when you have a federal disaster and when you have homes burning, you have the ability to take huge amounts of money out of the U.S. Treasury and out of the mortgage insurance funds at places like FHA and VA and fix a lot of problems fast and without disclosure. So I think there's a lot of cleanup of the New York Fed and Fed balance sheet going on here as a result of the end of the QE. In addition, Freddie and Fannie are moving to a single security system, and it wouldn't surprise me if they're cleaning out some of the remaining fraud on their balance sheet as well. And my guess is they're sucking every dime of surplus out of FHA and VA and any of the other mortgage funds sitting around the U.S. government. Interestingly enough, Buffett, who is the lead investor in Wells Fargo, is now buying positions in J.P. Morgan, Chase, and B of A. And so the question is, why is he doing that? Is he doing that because clearly they're the big utilities in the cash reengineering that's coming up on the federal government, or because they're getting in better and better shape because the Fed balance sheet's being cleaned up or the mortgage fraud's being taken care of? Or, you know, it could just be if you look at the Fed policies and the ECB policies, it's going to raise interest rates and the banks are in a position to make more money. But whatever it is, I find Buffett buying into J.P. Morgan Chase and B of A right at this time, given what was going on with Wells Fargo, to be very interesting and something worth keeping an eye on. Part of what's going on in California is you're burning a lot of homes, which is going to be very expensive to insurance providers. And so another question is, who's losing on in that insurance? Buffett has big insurance operations because there's not a lot of disclosure about them. I think it's difficult to figure out exactly what the California fires mean to him. You know, is it possible some of the things he's up to on J.P. Morgan and B of A and with cleaning out of the Wells fraud are to make up to him through his banking investments what he's losing on insurance? It's a little out there, but I don't know. They're going to be very interesting cash flows back and forth between the New York Fed member banks, Buffett's operation, and what's going on in California. Again, as I said earlier, take a look at PG&E's stock. It's getting absolutely slammed. They have about a $2.5 billion liability that they estimate for the 2017 fires, and their stock seemed to hold on pretty well. One, they have insurance, but two, it looked like it was going to be contained. Problem now is if PG&E is found liable, then they can't pass that liability through to the customers. And there's all sorts of squabbling about their involvement in the Paradise and Campfire fires. It does look to me as though they were turning off electricity in anticipation of fires coming. There's also accusations up in Paradise that water was turned off. It's hard to really determine the evidence. You just need a lot of people plowing through it for a long period of time. Again, Southern California Electric is the subsidiary of Edison International. Their stock is getting slammed as well. So keep an eye on the utilities, keep an eye on the insurers, because the money impact here can be significant, particularly if they continue. My guess is they're far from over. I think we're about halfway through. So be ready for a lot more fires, both north of San Francisco, in the line from 101 over up to Sacramento, and then over across to Reno. I think that's a hot area. Any area between sort of the north and south on the high-speed rail, and then north of LA along the coast. I just think we're in for more. There's definitely a relationship again to the missing money, because I think if you look at the team that would be involved in implementing fires, it's a very similar team to the one involved in implementing the missing money. I have two old articles that I think are really worth revisiting. One is called The Myth of the Rule of Law. Another is called Coming Clean Over the Fiscal Cliff. Basically, they're longer versions of the issue that I describe in the Red Button story, which is, you know, everybody in America wants their check and they want the story of I am good, but they don't want the good times to flow. And if you look at what the leadership has had to do to keep the good times flowing, you know, the general population has turned a very blind eye to a lot of really ugly stuff of things like this being done to people all around the world or people in poor neighborhoods. And now the reality is it's popping out and it's being done to everybody. And the karma here is if you allow it to be done to one, it can be done to all. And so what we're watching is really a subsidy and a hunt for subsidy. And that hunt for subsidy is like a cancer. And now it's moving out from eating alive the people who within the empire on the fringe to eating the empire itself. as you know, I think a lot of this is making it possible for the tech companies to bring a lot back and do a lot more for the military. But if I had to claim anybody was in charge here, I would say it was the people who own and control the New York Fed. They're sitting between the general population and whoever it is who wants the dividend. And the reality, as I've said before, I don't know if the people who command the dividend for the franchise known as Earth are a different species or not, but you might as well assume they are, because that's how much they care about you and me. You know, it's a very difficult position to be in, to be between the people who want the dividend and the general population, who at this point has not a clue what's going on. And what that means is the disassociation between the reality of the people running things and the reality of the general population is truly approaching a medieval disparity. You know, I could have made that the theme for tonight, the medieval disparity. So we'll talk more about it another time. If you haven't listened to my discussion with Harry Blaser about learning to walk about, it was part of why we did this. What's your action here? If you don't live in California, what you need to understand is, you know, this is very likely to spread across the whole country. The reality is when you have big development plans, whether it's Agenda 21, Agenda 30, whether it's just new big transportation projects, new facilities, you need space. Wherever that development comes, as the national security infrastructure moves into the heartland, this is going to continue to happen. This is a very economically efficient way to clear land for big reengineering. And so, again, I don't know for a fact that this is man-made, but I, as I said, I give it 80%. One thing we all need to do is we need to help people in California, particularly friends or friends of friends. And many people will say to me, well, I don't have much money. Well, give a dollar. It's so psychologically important for the people who are experiencing this to know we care. We need to express our care concretely, and we need to do it in intimate ways. So we've made a few small donations, and in the Hero of the Week, we've put up links to some of the firefighter funds. I prefer most of my donations to go intimate. So Ralph Fring and his wife had a house in Paradise that was lost. So I've donated to his crowdfunding, and we put a link up. But the best thing to do is to, if you have friends there, help them out. If you have friends of friends, help them out. They need to know that you're thinking of them and that you care. It's so psychologically important. A couple of other things. You need to start thinking about what life could be like when you need a safe and you need precious metal custodians who can withstand a fire which is 2,000 degrees or more. Most safes are really, really good safes. Are prepared for a 1,400 degree fire, not the kind of fires we're seeing here. So you need to think about that. You need to have great insurance so that if the house burns down, you have the funds to go out and bounce back. You need to have a disaster recovery plan, because whether it's fire or other natural disasters, we're going to see more and more and more of that kind of process. The people who bounce back the fastest not only have good insurance, but they archive. You need to have complete copies of your financial records. You need to have them in multiple places in digital form so that if your house burns down, you got all your records someplace else, you can come back up. If you talk to people who've lived through a natural disaster, the people who could whip out their deed and their insurance policy and had all their paperwork were in great shape. But some really good disaster recovery planning goes a long way. Another thing you need to do is to travel light. I keep putting up the video I love from World War Z, perfectly dreadful movie with Brad Pitt, where he's describing in times like this, movement is life. We need to get a lot less attached to material things. The mid-90s started with me living in an absolutely beautiful mansion with family antiques and art collections and beautiful furniture. You know, I lived like a princess. And basically, I went through a process where I sold almost every bit of it. And when the litigation was over and everybody said, you want to buy your antiques back? I said, nope, that's it. I'm buying the tiniest little house in the community where nobody wants the land, and I'm going to travel light, and that's what I do. I travel light. So I had a magnificent library that I had to sell, and actually, believe it or not, they stole a lot of my books. It's quite a story. The one thing I've accumulated back that I would certainly hate to leave is my library, but, you know, we need to travel light. We need to be prepared to rock and roll and come back. Open source networks can probably figure out the truth of what's going on, and I think the more truth we have, the better. If we're going to navigate what's going on, it helps to answer all the unanswered questions. And if you just keep collecting open source information and putting different pieces of the jigsaw puzzle down on the table, I think we'll probably figure out. There's no doubt mind control is slowing down the collection, you know, putting together the jigsaw puzzle piece. And I think one of the reasons you're seeing such brazen behavior in California is that the mind control is, from many aspects of the establishment, exceedingly successful. I think the way to deal with that is to bring transparency. So anything you can do to either bring transparency yourself or support transparency would be great. But remember, most important thing you need to do is raise your own vibration level. You need to remain coherent. I use prayer for protection and navigation. And as I said, just email us at office@celeri.com if you want a copy of our prayer book. At the end of it is the Deer's Cry, which is a prayer that sees me through all the greatest trials. One thing you do need to know is if you look at the speed at which houses get on fire and the difficulty of getting out in time, you need to be prepared to literally march out of your house in seconds flat. There's not enough time to stop and pack a bag. These fires are very, very high speed. Finally, while it's very easy to, if you believe, as I do, that there's a good chance that these are man-made, it's very easy to want to get upset and fight with the people doing it. What I would just say is, I go back to the story of Gideon. If you haven't read the story of Gideon or heard any of my discussions about it, you can read it in Judges chapter 6 through 9 in the Old Testament. But essentially, it's a story of how Gideon increases the light and the vibration, and the Midianites kill each other. So what you need to do is pull away and get as far away from the Midianites as possible, because ultimately, I do believe they'll kill each other. So whatever you do, please make sure you remain coherent. And part of that is focus on your piece of the puzzle that you want to put on the table, or your free and inspired life, and just keep turtling through, because success in this environment is overcoming, and you overcome by trying to have as much integrity as you can have, only associating with other people that do have integrity and turtle forward. You can imagine in situations like this, having people in your life who don't have integrity can make life very complicated and very difficult. They don't handle situations like this well at all. Money in markets. The U.S. dollar index now up 5.26% for the year. Alan Greenspan, liar-in-chief, and Larry Fink, the head of BlackRock, have been out talking about the government deficit and how it could threaten the reserve currency. They're doing everything they can to make the U.S. look weaker than it really is. Dollar remains dangerous and dominant. Wouldn't surprise me if they're trying to talk the dollar down. I tweeted out a graph showing the U.S. Treasury Federal October receipts, and it's very interesting to look at it. We're still running massive deficits, but what you'll see is you'll see how out of balance the mechanism is. You have the taxes coming in, most of which are individual. You have the money going out for Social Security, Medicare, interest on the Treasury debt, on the government's debt, and then military expenses, and then everything else is pretty miscellaneous. What you'll note is the corporate contribution to taxes is tiny, and if you compare that to what they are taking out, the whole thing is significantly out of balance. It really is a harvesting machine, particularly when you realize that it's the people providing the you know, the human capital to the military. And when you look at the combination of their taxes and their kids, it's a very ugly picture. It's also a very ugly picture for the young, because the only people really getting any money out of that, other than the corporations and their employees, are the people who are getting a return of their capital with Social Security and Medicare. But it's the same message as the California fires, which is we have a problem, and that is we have a tapeworm. We have a financial tapeworm and a spiritual tapeworm and a legal tapeworm. Fixed income, the long treasury down 8.09%. This is a really tricky time for investors because, you know, when the stock market heads down, you go to bonds. Bonds ain't such a great place to be, although short floating rates and short bank CD, something in the short market that's floating up in interest rates is the most attractive. Not to say that it's very attractive, but clearly long treasuries are not down 8%. The intermediate treasury down 2.68%. The bond aggregate down 2.2%. These numbers don't show it in part because of maturity, but the corporate bond spread is widening against the treasuries given the woes with GE. The reality is the national security state players are sitting pretty and the outsiders are getting squeezed. Who would have ever thought GE would be an outsider? So if you look at the fixed income market, the Fed is adamant it's going to raise rates in December, and the EC board is going to follow rates up. I shouldn't say it's because it doesn't have that kind of control anymore. It's going to follow rates up in December, and the ECB is adamant it's going to wind down its bond buying. You know, and the reality is if that's the case, Italy could really bolt from the EU. What this means is between the ECB and the Fed, you've got a major squeeze on the whole system. It's one of the reasons I think the chances of the California fires giving the financial cover for the feds to clean out the sort of crap on the Fed balance sheet is a very likely scenario. But as I said, those who control the central banks and the national security state are 100% protected, while the tightening of liquidity hits everybody who's an outsider, in essence. Not surprisingly, Buffett's sitting on mounds and mounds of cash. This whole picture is why elections are so hard fought. You basically have a credit mechanism that now, as we've described with all of our coverage on the missing money, is essentially out of control. It can just print money, create money, hand it out politically. And so, you know, the fight over controlling that basically printing press is just off the charts. And it wouldn't surprise me if it's one of the reasons why Buffett is buying the bank utilities. JP Morgan Chase, B of A, these are essentially, if you look at their infrastructure of providing services and depository services through the New York Fed to the U.S. government, they're a critical part of the U.S. government. And if you look at what's coming up, I believe we're coming into a major reengineering of the U.S. government using Amazon, JP Morgan Chase, B of A, and of course, Buffett's going to profit enormously. And again, I do believe it's part of what, it's very connected to what is happening in California. So let's look at equities. The S&P now up 3.65% for the year. The U.S. stock market is clearly correcting, but I still think we're going to see a correction, not a bear. But it's still possible. I said we'd find our levels after the election, but I still don't think we've found a bottom here. The home builders are down 22.74%. If Make America Great Again was really translating into real incomes, I don't see how the home building market could be as soft as it is, even given interest rates rising. One of the challenges, of course, as I said, for investors is given bonds down and given the market correcting, where do you go to be safe? And, of course, short-term rates are rising in the short end. So that's where a lot of people have gone. And it means the people with deep pockets are in a very pretty position because they're getting rising interest rates and they're going to be in a position to take advantage if we do find a bottom or even if it turns to a bear. Europe is correcting. The European ETF is now down 9.82%. Germany down 15.33%, the developed market ETF minus North America down 8.76%. China, a bear, is likely, especially if the trade wars continue. The large cap China down 9.39% for the year, and the small caps down 13.73%. The U.S. drops a gauntlet in the South China Sea, so it's not just the trade wars. The fight over the sea lanes in the South China Sea is really ratcheted up a notch. Let me just read from Asia Times. When U.S. Vice President Mike Pence flew on Tuesday over the South China Sea in transit to the Association of Southeast Asian Nations Summit in Singapore, his Air Force plane passed within 50 miles of China outposts in the contested Spratly Islands. Upon landing at the summit, attended by regional leaders, Pence said his overflight was a type of freedom of navigation operation, and that it was a message to China that the U.S. will not be intimidated by Beijing's warnings against U.S. operations in areas it claims in the maritime region. The message is, whether it's the trade wars or what's happening in California or the assertion of control of the sea lanes, the New York Fed member banks and their investors are going to make sure that the reserve currency, the dividend, and the investors are all fine. The emerging markets down 12.8%. The question still being, will a liquidity crisis hit them as the ECB and the Fed continue to squeeze with rising interest rates and the end of the ECB buying program? Commodities down 2.99%, as I said at the beginning of the year and all along. Gold and precious metals are not going to have a good year. Gold down 7.18%. Silver down 16.07%. But inflation definitely is happening. David Hockney had a painting just auctioned at Christie for $90 million. So inflation is still happening. And oil is way off its peak, down now almost 1% for the year, down 0.92. Well, the U.S. midterm elections are not over. The aftermath just keeps going on and on. Reminds me of my Washington pastor's old expression, God does not bless a mess. You see squabbles in Arizona, Mississippi, Florida. Florida had called for machine count. That didn't work. Palm Beach and Broward both came in late. And as a result, we've now called for a hand recount. So Florida is going to be going on for some time now. It just shows you the value of controlling the federal credit mechanism. You're talking about major pork and place-based power rolling off, particularly with the cash repatriating. So everybody's fighting whose district is going to get what business. And the food fight is enormous. If you want to follow the trench warfare, a good place to do it is the 2018 election page at Real Clear Politics. It's what I use to sort of follow what's happening as the battle for the Senate, the battle for the House, and the battle for the state houses continue post-election. To give you a sense about how bad the beatdown is, right after the election was over, the Solari Report just got hit with a tsunami of spam. I was just talking to the guy who runs our email server today, and he said the spam, which is always at the Solari Report, unbelievably heavy, now at the server level, is multiplied four or five times. Plus, you know, I'm back in the United States, so the AT&T phone systems, you know, we're back to fun and games with those. But it's all part of making life unproductive for the productive. Here it comes. I've talked about the reengineering of the federal government, particularly after the 2020 presidential election, and it's all flying into place. I told you Amazon was going to be a major player in reengineering the cash flows, particularly after the Whole Foods deal. They've announced where their new headquarters is going to be. They're going to split it between Northern Virginia and Long Island. That means they're plopping one down right next to the Federal Reserve, the New York Fed, the Board of Governors in Washington. But the real nuts and bolts of the transactional reality is New York and its operations in New York and the U.S. Treasury in Washington. So between Long Island and Northern Virginia, they're plopping right down in the middle of Fed transaction land. They're also putting a center of excellence with, I think, about 5,000 employees in Nashville. If you look at what the local governments are paying to subsidize their sites, there is definitely a negative return on investment. If your city lost getting an Amazon headquarters, you can breathe a sigh of relief because the small businesses were going to pay a pretty penny for the privilege of having Amazon there. In the meantime, we know that the 17 intelligence agencies are all in the Amazon cloud. And now that they've gotten comfortable in the Amazon cloud, they can suck all of the 21 federal databases and IT systems into that if they choose. Big swing is the JEDI contract. It's a $10 billion DOD contract for basically one cloud provider. So the question is, will it go into Amazon? Oracle just lost a protest. They were protesting the fact that they were just going to choose one single winner. So Oracle has been dismissed, and that puts DOD in a position to go ahead and issue that contract. You know, and so it'll be very interesting between the New York Fed member banks and Amazon and a few other players. Google, we know, is moving an operation into the East Coast. You're going to watch the federal bureaucracy and payment systems being re-engineered between the New York Fed member banks and the big tech companies. And so that's why I think it's very interesting that Buffett's buying into JP Morgan Chase and Bank of America at this time. So I'd love if anybody has time to research where the Treasury and the New York Fed member banks have their operations in and around DC area and the New York area, if we can tie them in. It'd be interesting to see how close we can tie those operations into where Amazon's going to plop down. We saw Gates apologize for Common Core either last week or the week before. It wouldn't surprise me if that's part of his eating humble pie to make sure he's in on this deal. And, you know, again, look at the Twitter feed for my graph of the October receipts of the federal government. If you contemplate how the federal government receipts work, where the cash comes from, where it goes, what you'll see is the corporations are not carrying their fair share. If you look at how much they're spending in stock buyouts versus how much they're ponying up in taxes versus how much they're pulling out of the federal credit mechanism, the whole thing does not balance out. And what you see, of course, is it is a harvesting machine. Well, if you think you had a bad week, your week was nowhere near as bad as Prime Minister May. The EU approved a Brexit deal, then the cabinet approved the Brexit deal, and then the Brexit secretary resigned saying the deal was terrible for England. Well, why didn't he do that before they cut the deal with the EU? Why didn't he do that before the cabinet approved the deal? I mean, you look over there and you think, what is going on? You have a couple more ministers and other junior ministers resign. So May's got a mess on her hands. And the question is, basically, will her government come apart? Big question mark over Brexit. Financial coup knowledge management, part of this reengineering I keep talking about, is getting rid of the sort of liabilities as you move forward into the next phase. The United States has just sued UBS, the largest Swiss bank, over mortgage fraud in 2000, you know, pre-bailout. It's like, why did you wait 10 years to sue them? What's that about? Big question mark over that. And you wonder if the best defense isn't an offense. Then Lloyd Blankfein is in the hot seat. Goldman is embroiled in a scandal in Malaysia. Lloyd Blankfein, former chairman of Goldman Sachs, is now implicated. Question was, is that why he resigned as chairman when he did? Because he was going to be implicated in this. The other question is, Blankfein is arguably one of the most knowledgeable players in the financial coup, how it was engineered. Are they just trying to keep Blankfein quiet? And essentially, again, the best defense is a good offense. Take down one of the most knowledgeable players now. Anyway, it's something to watch what happens to Blankfein. Bizarro, is Mueller lost in the weeds? Jerome Corsi, the head of the editor for InfoWars in Washington, says he expects to be indicted. If you look at it, it's clearly a trumped up obstruction of justice charge. It's how they get people on a technicality. Corsi clearly didn't have good legal representation. And given how much Corsi knows about Washington, why wasn't he hip to the game? It's kind of shocking. It's people can cover the corruption, but that doesn't mean they know how to manage dealing with it. It's a lot of questions here. Trump says he's going to submit written answers to written questions from Mueller. When Trump says that what's going on at the Mueller investigation is a hoax, it's a joke. I think he's being kind. It is a hoax and a joke, but Mueller's staying in there trying to cause as much problems for the administration as possible. Christine Lagarde, head of IMF at the Singapore FinTech, supports cryptocurrencies for central banks. She said it will make up for no cash. I don't think so. Digital systems do not make up for no cash. No cash, you can put in your pocket, walk away, spend it, nobody can see it. And then so bad you don't even know what to say. Two items. There is a new vaccine for celiac disease, which means you're going to put poison in your body to make your body adapt to eating poison. Why would you do that? I'm speaking clearly in a non-expert tone, but it is so frustrating. The second is the U.S. announced it's preparing to prosecute Julian Assange. I'm wondering if May's problems make it possible for the U.S. to shake a stick and insist on extradition. I think this is not a wonderful idea. It's a big mistake, but let's see what happens. Our hero this week is the California firefighters, for very obvious reasons. If you look at the extraordinary effort made by both professional and volunteer firefighters in California and firefighters who've come from all over the country to help, it's really an enormous, enormous and amazing effort. So anything we can do to support them, I put up in the hero commentary this week links to places you can donate to support them. And I think it's very, very important that we do whatever we can do to express our support at this time. Somebody got a big speech from me today. This happens occasionally. They ask me, why is nobody saying anything? Why is nobody doing anything? Don't ever say that to me. Don't ever use no one. Thousands of people are doing things. Thousands of people are saying things. You need to start affirming the people who are doing things and saying things and not referring to them as nobody, because they're not fake news, fake government, fake corporations. Fake news, fake government, and fake corporations are not somebody, and the people doing things, nobody. I don't know where that mind control thing comes in, but don't ever put that hat on around me. Stop talking about the Midianites, that's my name for, you know, back to the story of Gideon, as though they were legitimate institutions or people of importance. They're not somebody, and, you know, people like me are not nobody. In the book of Judges, Gideon threw the Midianites out of Israel with 300 faithful, competent people. You don't need a lot of faithful, competent people, but you need faithful, competent people. Faithful, competent people do not talk about the Midianites as if they were somebody and refer to people like the California firefighters as if they were nobody. There are plenty of people doing a lot. It's incredible, and they're doing it without $21 trillion of resources, okay? So just because somebody can steal $21 trillion doesn't make them somebody in my eyes. So get into integrity. Let's go to the movies. I wanted to discuss Crazy Rich Asians. It tells a couple of important things. You can see the extraordinary investment and economic success of Singapore, which is one of the big, big Asian cities. You can also see the extraordinary wealth that's been created by the growth of Asia. You can see the issues of inequality and hypermaterialism we've talked about. Far from the best movie of the year. It's kind of a charming little story. But you can see all those things. And I think it's for those of you who can't get on a plane and go visit Singapore, it will give you a real dive into it. My favorite documentary for the growth of Asia, of course, is Red Obsession. So I would put Crazy Rich Asians behind Red Obsession. But it's another way to get a sense of the dynamism of the growth of Asia. Our interview this week is my discussion of megacities, the theme for our third quarter wrap-up. It was a natural evolution out of the rise of the Asian consumer, because the growth of the megacities is very much a Asian phenomena. Of the 47 megacities, 30 are in Asia, including the three largest megacities in the world. 3% of the global population lived in cities as of 1800. Today, it's 50,000. It's headed to 80,000. In my opinion, it's not a good trend. It's a trend that supports central control. It makes it easier to securitize everything, particularly in the win-lose model where people are moving out of ownership and into being renters and being dependent on a centralized infrastructure. There's a great article in Conservative Treehouse this week about Main Street versus Wall Street, and it's good to see more and more people understand the issue of the harvesting of places and doing it through the centralized systems in the big financial centers, whether it's Washington or Wall Street. Anyway, so I want to talk about megacities. It's important for you to understand megacities in the context of what's happening in the economy globally. So I'm glad we had the opportunity to do this, even though I was a city girl. I grew up in a city, but if you look at what's happening with cities, it's not my favorite thing going on the planet. Ask Catherine. Hi, Catherine. I must thank you for the commendable insight the Slayer Report provides, especially in the growth of AI and the Asian consumer. The in-depth information provided with a focus on building a human civilization reaffirms why I subscribe. Thank you. Recently in Canada, the government has publicly defended a request done through Statistics Canada to the largest banks in Canada for the personal banking information on 500,000 private Canadian households, including cash withdrawals and bill payments. I suspect that this information would be used by the government to no benefit to the average citizen. With your understanding of money and control mechanisms, I would like your impression of what use this information could ultimately be used for. I've taken your advice and left the mainstream banks, now joining with a reputable local credit union that is not under these guidelines, but I'm concerned about the greater implications of this action and how this could affect my friends and family that bank with the large institutions. There are many different possibilities, but let me just give you some of them. One is, it's unlikely that it's just one goal. You always stack functions when you do a collection this big. The first thing is, everybody's interested in going cashless, so they want to look at the cash flows to figure out how to do that. The second is, China's way ahead by having feeless ACH payment mechanisms, particularly mobile-to-mobile, and wouldn't surprise me if Canada, especially with their major sort of Chinese audience, is very aware of that and wants to see how they can catch up. If they're looking to re-engineer how they do tax payments and collections, this data would be very valuable for that, as well as re-engineering government payment systems. So if you think the federal government, with what's happening with Amazon, is teeing up to do a major re-engineering of systems, I'm sure Canada is doing the same. So keep an eye on whatever Amazon. Amazon's going to become the federal back office, so keep an eye on what's going on there. I'm sure they're looking for ways to improve tax collection and tax enforcement collections. So you have new big enforcement software programs that can look at what's going on and predict likelihood that people are avoiding taxes and there's an opportunity to make money from civil money penalties. So one of the things I'm really afraid of is how much of our time can be wasted by audits that come off of trolling this kind of data with new enforcement software programs. Then they can create databases for the intelligence services and their contractors and the bank contractors. And if you look at all the different kinds of products and services that those private contractors can build out of this stuff, it's just phenomenally wealth generating. And that's the basis for a lot of political contributions. So as I said, the possibilities are many, and I doubt it's just one. There's some stacking of functions going on here. Also from Canada, hi, Catherine. This program was recently recommended at a meeting of my college faculty. It was referred to our member by a trustee of our pension fund. And then there's a link to a video program at PBS on, it's called The Pension Gamble. So I posted that, and I really appreciate your sending that. Dear Catherine, thank you for your inspiring work. I heard you say that the question of who owns the U.S. debt is key to understanding who governs the planet. I thought the U.S. sovereign debt was owned by the prime banks, Federal Reserve, foreign governments such as China, and pension and securities. What I'm missing? A great deal of it is owned by them, but I think there's a lot that's been issued off balance sheet, and then there's more that is, to me, not identifiable. So if you look at the planet debt wrap-up I did in 2015, we tried at that time very hard to identify who owned all the sovereign government debt globally, and couldn't figure it out. I would note one of my favorite articles that is linked at the missingmoney.solari.com page is a article from the Financial Times saying, oh, foreigners think the U.S. owes it $2 trillion more than the U.S. says it owes. So the debt accounts don't conform. Interestingly enough, when Paul O'Neill was Secretary of Treasury under the second Bush presidency, he hired a bunch of academics to figure out how much debt was outstanding in the U.S. government and where it was. And they posted the study up on the web, and in 2 days it was gone, and Paul O'Neill had resigned as Secretary of the Treasury, and you wonder, what was that about? Hey there, Miss C. Welcome home. I just don't know what to make of all of this. I'm a bit skeptical about directed energy tech idea, but there are some super weird things in many of these photos. And then there's a link to California fire photos. Yes, if you look at, I just put up on my Twitter feed a video of from Thousand Oaks that shows drones flying over a neighborhood, and you have selective houses throughout the neighborhood being burnt down, and the trees around them and the other houses are untouched. You know, and you wonder, okay, who owns those homes? What's that database pattern say? Hi, Catherine. One more update. Our fires are still burning. They're still spraying overnight, even. They keep on extending the wind warnings. They clearly have not finished with this yet. Then somebody sent an article from the Mercury News about the PG&E issues up in the Paradise in the campfire blaze. So it's fairly long, but I think the PG&E issues there are very important. Hi, Catherine. I wanted to give you a little update from Los Angeles. First, some observations that I think are concerned, but who knows, maybe a coincidence. Last few weeks, chemtrails have been off the charts. That's what I'm hearing from both Northern and Southern California, that the chemtrails are off the charts. I follow a Facebook page who says there's a transmitter manipulation that is producing the drought conditions. You could feel the moisture in the air coming, and then the planes come and no rain. First, we have the border light shooting in Thousand Oaks, and then a fire starts in the town right next to it by the Rocketdyne nuclear meltdown site. We have two families whose houses are in danger of burning in Bell Canyon. We've been following it very closely. They were going back and forth trying to get into their neighborhood, and they said a curious thing. The firefighters are having a hard time fighting it, not only because of the wind, but also because they can't tell where the fire is until a house starts burning, meaning it looks like there's no fire around it. And then suddenly, someone reports that the house is on fire. Weird. All of the trees surrounding the houses when the fire starts are perfectly intact. They also cut their power before the fires got to the neighborhood. We have friends in Simi Valley. We're told the power is going to be cut tonight. The fire is not over there. Just also heard that they, whoever they are, said that it is headed towards Chatsworth now. The news is giving fire weather updates and calling it Fire Storm Watch. Since when did fire become a weather season? Just thought I would update you. I know that you have got many accounts and are able to see a big picture trend. Also, I listened to you and Harry speak about what to do, about what is coming, and I have to tell you that hearing you both talk about being right with God, staying coherent, and having faith, hope, and love are enormously comforting and uplifting. Thank you for that. You absolutely want to get in a position in this environment where you nurture your faith, hope, and love, and you can get not dependent on material possessions. So I'm not saying don't take care of your material possessions. I'm just saying if you have to choose between your faith, hope, and your love and your material possessions, it's so, so important that you choose your faith, your hope, and your love. More on that in our prayer book if you're interested. Hi, Catherine. 45,000 acres burned in less than 24 hours in Malibu. I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen a fire spread so quickly, so fast. Then 9 deaths in Northern California fire clearing the way. This is real and real scary. Yes, it is. I believe there are almost 300 people still missing in the campfire area. So I think the death count is now up to 58 total for the recent fires, but the count of people who are missing is much, much higher. Catherine, I just saw your tweet. I posted in the November 8th comments section the question on the fires in Paradise. This notice was posted on Facebook by my friend's wife on her Facebook feed in the early hours of yesterday morning before the fire was supposed to have started. She posted because she was visiting her kids in Fresno, but her elderly second husband was still in Paradise. He's one of my oldest friends and my main spiritual mentor. He is safe, but lost everything. He's staying with a friend who is a former nun in Oroville. Here's the notice. I also posted this on a prep forum I've been a member of since 2004 as its own thread, asking if anyone had heard of Fire Danger Near Paradise. So I have a timestamp of sorts on the fire. PG&E, I've heard, is claiming they never turned the power off, but that is not what people said during TV interviews. Hope this helps. And this is from somebody who's now in Ireland but was born in Long Beach and grew up in the Bay Area. We have sent several donations, including to the crowdfund of somebody who's up in Paradise. And again, it's so, so important that you reach out and help people you know or people that your friends know. If you can send support intimately, it's just a way of saying, I care, even if it's only a dollar. I'm thinking of you and I care. And I think it's really important to show our caring and our prayers with action now. So that's it in closing. We have a great lineup. November 22nd, the food series Poultry with Bill Nyman. We've done beef, we've done hog, and so now with Thanksgiving, it's the perfect time to talk turkey. And then November 29th, a great interview with William Binney, Bill Binney, and Kirk Wiebe on their exciting new venture, Pretty Good Knowledge. And I've got coming up in December a whole series of interviews from Europe. We're going to publish most of them as special reports. And then the best of 2018 we do in 2 weeks in December. We'll do the wrap-ups for one, but then our favorites for the Soleri team for the next week. If you want to raise your hand and give us a vote on what you thought were the best Soleri reports in 2018, just send them to Ask Catherine or post under subscriber input. So next week, I'll be posting Money and Markets early because Thursday is Thanksgiving. There is no market close on Thursday because the market is closed on Thursday. Anyway, so I'll be over enjoying Thanksgiving in the Texas Panhandle. I'll be giving thanks for the wonderful subscribers I'll be having Thanksgiving with, but also all the wonderful subscribers that make it possible for me and the Soleri team to do what we do. We have a lot to give thanks for. And on Thanksgiving, I'm going to give thanks to you and for you. I can't tell you how much I appreciate working for you. Anyway, so until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not. Good night and good luck. Need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen,